Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. We're going to turn now back to the statements that Yana shared with us regarding the conclusions, statements regarding the consequence and the penalties associated with Adam and Chawa choosing poorly, choosing to reject and disregard God's instructions, and then Satan's design and desire to corrupt and misrepresent God's statements, that there was a consequence and there was a penalty associated with those decisions, as there has to be. At the moment there ceases to be consequence for choosing one thing versus another, in this case, God's guidance versus man's influence. Whether in the moment there is no longer a penalty for doing that which is harmful, which is what HaSatan did, then you cannot have morality. You can't have justice. You can't be civil. You can't be reasonable. I mean, there is a tremendous amount that is lost when we buy into the political myth which condemns the exercise of good judgment, being judgmental. So much is lost. And God wants to reinforce that with us so that we understand what is lost when we cease to exercise good judgment, when we cease to be discriminating and discerning. Now, if we consider God's overriding predictions regarding what was going to occur, we find that the role Satan plays in this drama that was about to unfold is presented under the misnomer Lucifer, meaning light giver from the Latin. But that's not Satan's actual name or his description. It's Helael ben Shakar. Now, Helael speaks of arrogant and rising, and Ben means son, and Shakar is the morning star. Now, you can look at the morning star, and there's two ways to interpret Shakar in Hebrew. One of those is as the planet Venus, which is considered the rising star, the morning star, because it's so bright that you can actually see it in the morning. Or the most prominent morning star is our sun. And I think that since Shakar is based upon other Hebrew words very close etymologically to other Hebrew words for son, he is the arrogant son of the rising sun. Therefore, he's going to present himself as the greater light. That is what HaSatan, Satan, is interested in doing. So Hillel's name was prophetic, and that he gave rise to the sun god religions and sun god worship that was globally in opposition to Yahweh. And if you think of this as you dismiss it as, all right, the sun god religions that were born and bred in Babylon made their way to Egypt, where Amen-Ra was considered the, both god and sun, made their way to Greece and to the pagan Grecian mythology, as well as to Rome, where the sun was always the chief god, and that the sons of God were considered either the planets or the moon or the stars. What you want to be careful with is not dismissing the fact that this Babylonian mythology that was conceived by Satan as being the rising sun is part and parcel to Christianity. It's even part and parcel to Islam. But in Christianity, there are sun god images everywhere. The steeples on Christian churches are like the obelisks in Egypt, where large towers that were built, the pyramids in Babylon, where the first and last light of the sun's rays would strike the top of the obelisk as the sun rose and set each day. The cross is symbolic of when the sun crosses the constellation of Taurus the bull, which the bull was a primary symbol of the sun and of God, to these pagans during the spring equinox. And this integration of the sun and the cross is symbolized by the Ankh, the most famous and long-living cross, which is the Egyptian symbol, where you have a cross with a circle above it designating the sun. So much of Christianity is based upon the sun god religion, where on Easter Sunday, Mother Earth is impregnated by the sun's rays, because that is the time where the earth is positioned and the sun is positioned in Taurus the bull, in the constellation of Taurus the bull. But Mother Earth is impregnated, and 9 months later at the winter solstice, when the days start to grow longer, the son of the sun is born, resurrected, if you will. Christianity incorporated Easter and Christmas into its holiest days. The sun god was worshipped on Sundays, just as is the case in Christianity. This god, the sun, was called the Lord, just as Christians refer to their god today. And if you look at a Catholic church in particular, there are sunbursts everywhere. And all of the saints, including their god, always has a halo above their head. The halo is symbolic of the sun. They even wear round hats. Their little beanies are the same hats that were worn, symbolic of the sun. And so this tendency to worship Satan as if he were the greater light has permeated most of man's religions, even socialist secular humanism's environmentalism has the worship of the sun and Mother Earth. So, as we study the actual name of Satan, Helel ben Shakar, we do learn a lot of things. For example, Helel, the adversary's name, also means contemptible and degraded, once proud but now humbled, polluted, corrupted. It also means to shine in the sense of showing off or boasting, to be clamorous and foolish, to celebrate oneself, to be foolish, to feign oneself, to be mad against someone. The first key word in the list of synonyms regarding the meaning of Helel is stultify. And stultify is not a word that we use commonly in English, at least anymore. But it means to make oneself appear ridiculous, to render futile or ineffectual by degrading or frustrating the means to achieve that which is meritorious. The second key word, feign, is also intriguing. It implies that Helel misrepresents himself. He puts on a false appearance. He invents lies and deceptions. He pretends. He counterfeits. So in a word, Helel, we have discovered the adversary's name and his nature. We know that Satan does not want to be worshipped as Satan, as the adversary, but instead as God. And therefore, when Christians say, you know, my religion cannot be satanic because I'm not praying to the devil, they're being deceived because they don't know his name or his tactic or what he actually wants or how he presents himself. Paul saw him exactly as he was on the road to Damascus, as flashing light. It was the way that Yahusha said that he saw him fall from heaven, as flashing light, using exactly the same term. Now, returning to Bereshith, Genesis, and the prophecy that God shared with us regarding the consequence for both the woman, for the man, and for HaSatan, it is worthy of noting that Yahweh was right when he spoke of male domination. Now, he did not say that he was passing an edict saying that men would rule over women. He said no such thing. In fact, his idea, based upon his presentation of the way that he created Chawa to be with Adam is that they would be equals. They would be different and yet equal. They would contribute differently to the relationship, even though they were both peers, side by side, arm in arm, eye to eye. It was Chawa's deceiving of Adam that brought this dominion upon Chawa. It was not God's design. It was a consequence of Chawa's actions. But it is true even to this day. Women toll and suffer for the men that they desire, just as the prophecy suggests. And as a consequence of having committed an act that led to death, they bear the burden of being the cradle of life. That is why Yahweh named Adam's wife Chawa, life giver. Her name's not Eve. That's the name of a pagan sun goddess. Chawa means life giver. According to Yahweh, Chawa's punishment was a quid pro quo. Woman influenced man, so men will now influence women. Again, this is not God's desire. It's not God's design. Just a consequence. Something that women brought on themselves. A woman chose to influence man in a inappropriate way. And so now, women are influenced by man. Adam lived in paradise. So he was conceived to be immortal. He did not have to work. He knew nothing of struggling to survive. There was no pain. He chose, however, of his own volition, to give all that away. So now his life would become prickly. There would be more thorns than roses. His world, which was comprised of every good thing, was now polluted with evil by his own choice. It is the consequence or curse of sin, of making bad choices. We have brought all of the negativity and hellish conditions that we experience in this world on ourselves. War is a consequence of our choices. Poverty is a consequence of our choices. We have brought sickness upon ourselves because of our choices. That's God's instruction here. That's the insight he is providing us. This is what Adam did to himself. There is a consequence of choosing not to trust God's guidance. Back to Shattering Mist. As we conclude these thoughts, we recognize that because of the choices we have made, we struggle to live. And thanks to Adam, we all die. Returning from the dust from which we have come, from which Adam was named. I mean, his name speaks of the primary elements that make up the material world. Adamah. Yahweh's teachings are eternal, so the review of fulfilled prophecies help us to understand those which have not yet been accomplished. If we can determine how his predictions have become history in the past, we're in a better position to predict how they will be fulfilled in the future. He saw to it that we had ample information from which to evaluate his forecasts. Now, continuing on with the Bereshith account, the beginning of the Torah, this is chapter 3 of the first book of the Torah, we read the man called his wife's name Chawa, because she exists as the mother of all life. Now, it's interesting that that up to this point, Chawa has been referred to by Yahweh as Isha. Now, Isha is important for us because on four of the seven invitations to walk away from human political and religious deception to God and to camp out with him, on four of those seven invitations, we are specifically asked to answer God's invitation and to come into the presence of the Isha, which is the maternal nature of God's light, the set-apart spirit. And so up to this point, the comforter, the one who was to be Adam's constant companion, has been the Isha, conveying the nature of the set-apart spirit, our spiritual mother. And now the Isha has been given a name, and the name is Chawa. The name is not Eve. You will find Eve in virtually every English Bible translation. And all that does is prove to you that you cannot trust an English Bible translation. The three letters that comprise the Chawa, the hard CH sound, the Hebrew wa, and the he, cannot in any way, shape, or form be transliterated Eve. Names are always transliterated, which means that you replicate the sound of the name in the new language. For example, Osama bin Laden is Osama bin Laden in Arabic, in French, in German, and in English. Chawa is Chawa, no matter what language you're speaking. Yahweh is Yahweh, no matter the language. Yahusha is Yahusha in every language. In English, in German, in Spanish, in French, as well as Chinese. There is no justification for transliterating Chawa as Eve. Eve is simply a replacement. Eve is the name of a Mother Earth goddess in pagan literature. It's the basis from which we have named our planet Earth. The same kind of religious malfeasance, of course, exists with Yahweh's name and with the designation Yahusha. You'll find Yahweh's name not transliterated as Yahweh, which the four letters that comprise his name, there are four vowels, and they are pronounced Yahweh. You'll find his name replaced with the satanic title Lord. Just as if you examine Yahusha's name, it has been replaced with the man-made moniker Jesus. No basis for Jesus. It's meaningless at best. And if you don't know Yahusha, you most certainly don't know who's saving you. You know, this notion in John 3:16 that all you have to do and believe in him and you shall live, you can't know, trust, or rely on someone that you don't know. And if you're calling him Jesus, you got no idea who he is. Yahusha tells us that it is Yahweh himself that is saving us. It's an extraordinarily important concept that names need to be transliterated and pronounced accurately, while at the same time the meaning of those names can be translated. Yahusha is the proper transliteration of the name Yahusha. It is presented 220 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But the meaning of that name is from Yasha and Yahweh, meaning Yahweh saves. So it is important that we take the time to recognize why God revealed these names. Chawa is first among them. Chawa means the one who gives and renews life. We'll return in a moment. So here we find the man calling his wife's name, Shem, name, personal and proper designation, Chawa. So there's no question that it's a name, and everyone that does translations professionally knows that you transliterate names and you translate words. For example, it's Ha Adam. If you're going to recognize Adam as a word, and presented when it's preceded by the definite article Ha Adam, then it would be the man. We translate Adam. If Adam was used as a name, it would be Adam called, but preceded by the definite article, it would be here, the man called. He summoned, he proclaimed, he announced, he called out. His wife's, the Isha, the woman's, name, Shem, as Chawa. It's a name. Now, It is also interesting that Isha is presented here in juxtaposed, if you will, with the Chawa, saying that the Isha, which is the light, the maternal aspect of Yahweh's light that we are invited to approach and enter into the company of on four of the seven Moed Mikre, of these invitations to meet with God, that her name is Chawa, which means in Hebrew, the one who gives and renews life, the one who shelters life, and the one who interprets and informs. Perfect depiction of the set-apart spirit. And this goes on to say, because she exists as the mother, the M of all life. And if you're looking for eternal life, there is only one mother, our spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit, the Isha that we are asked to come into the presence of. God, in this one sentence, has explained why he is asking us to answer his invitation and approach the presence of the Isha. She is the one who renews and restores life. She exists as the M, the mother of all life, Che, of familial and eternal existence. Couldn't be any clearer than this. Here in the first book of the Torah, the third book of the Torah, Kara, and its explanations of how we are encouraged to observe the Mikre, these seven invitations to be called out and meet with God, is explained. There's only one word in the midst of them that is the least bit challenging to interpret. And here it is explained. The Isha. Ha-Adam, Kara. And when we look at the Mikra, which we're trying to understand here, these invitations to be called out and meet with God, the seven Mikra, we recognize they're based upon Kara. And God even introduced Kara here in this statement so that we would understand what he was communicating to us later on in the text. Ha-Adam. Kara. Isha, his wife, his woman, the female entity, the maternal aspect of God's light. Ha-Adam, Kara, Isha, Chawa, the Shem Chawa. Shem is the personal proper name. Chawa is the name given to the Isha. Chawa means the source of life's renewal, of the source of sheltering life, the one who interprets and informs. Because she exists as, this is the Isha, named Chawa, exists as the mother, the M of all life. Now you might say that I'm extrapolating too far by identifying this Isha with the Isha that on four occasions during the seven Moed Mikre that we're asked to enter the presence of by associating the Isha with the maternal aspect of Yahweh's light, because Isha is also the feminine version of Ish, which is the Hebrew word for fire, light. But here, she's called the mother. Now, she's called the mother not of Adam's children, but the mother of all life. Kol Che. Now, when you look at the role that Chawa played, she was not the mother of all humanity either. Homo sapiens outside the garden. She wasn't the mother of crocodiles or rhinoceroses or garden slugs, but just of humankind with a nesama or conscience. And it is that nesama conscience that was given to Adam and to Chawa that enables us to enjoy the renewal of life and life eternal with God as a result of the Mikra from Kara, when we come into the presence of our spiritual mother and of God's maternal light, the Isha, on those days. All of that is conveyed here. She is the mother of all life's renewal and of eternal life and of a spiritual life and of life lived in the sheltered garden that God has provided previously and will return all of us to during the millennial celebration of Sukkot, camping out with God, the seventh Mikra, and then for all eternity thereafter. Chawa from Cheth Wah He is based upon Chaya. Chaya is a verb, and Chawa is a noun, which conveys to declare, to show, to make known. So Chawa means to inform, to interpret, and to explain, to declare, to show, and make known life from Che. So she exists as the Isha, this maternal manifestation of Yahweh's light, this one who renews life, this mother of all life, this basis for the Kara, the Mikra, exists to declare, to show, to make known, to inform, to interpret, and to explain life. Powerful, huh? All of that by closely examining one statement that God has made. Chawa means to live and to remain alive, to sustain life and to live prosperously forever, to be restored to life, to be revived, to be refreshed, and to be renewed. Combined, the basis of Chawa provides a perfect depiction of the set-apart spirit's primary purpose, to provide life, to renew life, to restore life, to sustain and preserve life, to declare God's existence, to show the way, to make it known, through informing, interpreting, and explaining the word. But there's more. Chawa's name also means tent, shelter, and tabernacle, symbolic of the final mikra of Sukkah, of shelters, and the role the Spirit's garment of light plays in our salvation. Collectively, declares, shows, and makes known, interprets, informs, and explains, as well as the one who renews, restores, sustains, and preserves life, makes it obvious that Chawa, like the sheltered enclosed garden itself and the festival feast of Sukkah shelters, serves as a metaphor for our spiritual mother and for God's idea of camping out with Him for all time. When you understand what transpired in Eden and how we will return to the conditions experienced in Eden and the role that Chawa, the Isha, plays, then you understand the covenant, God's desire, His will, what He is offering us, how we go about responding to His guidance rather than ignoring it, to participate in the covenant, and what living with Him will be like, as well as what living without Him is like. It's all laid out here. It's all explained. You don't need a sermon from Billy Graham. In fact, that's counterproductive. You don't need a New Testament. In fact, that's counterproductive. It's all been explained right here. All you have to do is understand the words and make the connections that enable understanding. We now know precisely the Father's will, relative to our relationship with Him and how we can engage in that relationship. Now, if you have a Strong's Concordance, you can look up their number 2332 in the Hebrew section. There you will find Chava with two V's from Chav and Va, or pronounced Chav Va, a noun proper feminine. Causatively, they say it's from 2331. Two occurrences. The King James Authorized Version translates as Eve twice. the first woman, wife of Adam. Additional information, Eve equals life or living. Wow. That's why I always, when somebody asks me, you know, what tools would you use, there are some advantages to Strong. Strong's does a pretty decent job in showing the etymological roots of words. But they're just as likely to be wrong as they are right. And their definitions of words. You don't have to be very smart to know that there is no V sound in scriptural Hebrew. None. Much less two V's. You don't have to be very smart to know that there is no way that you can translate Chawa as Eve and be correct. So as we consider the errors that are presented in Strong's and why you need more than one lexicon if you wish to validate and amplify Yah's testimony, you first recognize that the letters C-H, W, and H do not comprise one V, much less two. The second, Chawa is a proper noun. It is specifically designated as a name. And the universal rules for translation require that all names should be transliterated, which means you replicate their sound. You don't translate them. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Considering the name Chawa, which first and foremost ought to tell you that you ought not trust your English translation of the Bible. Matter of fact, even the term Bible is erroneous. That's the name of a pagan goddess. It's Biblia. From the Greeks, from the Egyptians, it became the Greek word for book only because in the Egyptian town that was named after the goddess Biblia, it was a place where papyrus reeds grew, and those papyrus reeds were imported into Phoenicia. And when they were imported into Phoenicia, the town where they grew most prolifically was named after the same Egyptian goddess. And therefore, the name of the Egyptian goddess became the synonymous with the place where papyrus was produced, and papyrus became the basis for codexes or books, replacing parchment, which was primarily animal skins, right around the time of the change from AD to BC, and some even prior to that, but for the most part, papyrus begins around 200 or so BCE, and replaces parchments as the oldest material upon which books were written. And then that name was transliterated, so rather than calling the Bible the book, they named the book right after the name of the pagan goddess. Not a very appropriate thing to do. So as we look at Chawa, and we recognize that it's a proper noun, that means that it needs to be transliterated. Now, if Bible, for example, Biblia, is just a word, it needs to be translated, and it should have been the book. But when you transliterate something, then you're designating it as a name. This was a name, and yet it was not transliterated to Chawa, but instead changed to Eve, which is a transliteration of Eva, which you'll find written in the Catholicism's Latin Vulgate. That's where it first appeared, after the popular pagan Mother Earth goddess. The same false spirit, our planet, derived its name. It's sad but true. If we were to remove words with a pagan past from the English language, I guess we'd all be speaking Hebrew, which is why we spend so much time trying to understand Hebrew. Now, third, there is no indication that Chawa was the first human woman. None. In fact, the evidence is the contrary. Only that she was the first female created in the likeness of Adam, who himself was created with a nesama, a conscience, which enabled him to be in the image of Yahweh. Scriptural and scientific evidence confirms that human animals populated the planet outside of the garden. Homo sapiens date to about 100,000 BCE. It's interesting that the oldest Homo sapien fossils are found in a cave in Israel, and that they date to between 99 and 103 BCE. So Homo sapiens exceed the time that Adam and Chawa were booted from the garden by 94,000 years. 94,000 years. Adam and Chawa were booted from the garden just 20 years shy of 6,000 years ago. So the evidence is that she was not the first human female, and therefore Strong's is wrong. It's not what God says anyway. Fourth, Eve does not mean or equate to life or living in a scriptural sense, but according to the satanic religious myths which evolved from Babylon, Mother Earth was always the life giver. She was impregnated by the sun during the spring equinox and gave birth to the son of the sun 9 months later during the winter solstice. As such, she became the mother of God and the queen of heaven. Today, these pagan rites are known as Easter, Christmas, and the Madonna and Child. Fifth, Chawa isn't causatively from Chawa. They are indistinguishable, actually, in the Hebrew text. Chawa, which is Strong's 2333, is written identically in the text. And Chawa, as a verb, defines the noun and therefore defines the proper noun, and it means to tell, to declare, to show, and to make known. But we've come to the end of our time today. We will return tomorrow both to the myth of global warming as well as to reveal as much as can be learned from God's testimony regarding what occurred in Eden. May God bless.